Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 507, titled Knock, Knock, Knockin' on Heaven's Gate, Another Conversation with Daniel Hopsicker. This has been recorded on April 17th of the year 2005. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, and Burying the Boys, the CIA, the Mob, and America's Secret History. Daniel Hopsicker is, as well, the guiding light behind and the writer for the Mad Cow Morning News, and among the stories that Daniel has covered is a bizarre series of connections running through some phony universities in primarily the West Coast, and how this overlaps not only the milieu of some of the West Coast connections to 9/11, but some very, very interesting tendrils running through the darker corners of the New Age, and even through there onto the so-called 9/11 truth movement. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airways.
Hey, happy to be with you, Dave.
All righty.
I like the title of your show.
Yeah.
I may use it sometime.
No, it'll be worthwhile. What the reference, of course, it's a takeoff on a Bob Dylan composition, Knock, Knock, Knockin' on Heaven's Door, and it's transposing that to the Heaven's Gate suicide cult, which took place in Rancho Santa Fe. And one of the people we're going to be talking about, Sam Kuchesvahani, rented the property to the Heaven's Gate people, and Marshall Applewhite, the late not-so-great Marshall Applewhite, the scion of that particular suicide cult, has a number of interesting connections to John Gray, the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and Gray is an interesting fellow in and of himself. But that is sort of that is the yellow brick road that we're going to be taking through this particular Oz. And so let's take, why don't we...
I'm only interested, let me tell you what my through line is, because it's nothing you've just mentioned.
Sure, okay? Go ahead. Okay.
Although, you know, I mean, you were right to mention, because all that stuff is there.
Yep.
The story I'm telling, the through line I'm following is who the heck is this guy in San Diego, it called the best chance to have stopped the 9/11 plot before it happened, and who apparently has such interesting knowledge that there are 28, 29 blank pages in the Joint Congressional Intelligence Committee report referring in large part to this individual. And this guy is apparently so entertaining when the Joint Intelligence Committee 9/11 hearing issued a subpoena for him, the White House ordered the FBI not to deliver it. I always thought that the Congress of the United States of America was one of the three co-equal branches of the U.S. government, but apparently I was misinformed.
Now, again, this was a subpoena that was issued by the Congressional Committee
Investigation. The only one.
Yep. The only committee.
They only issued one.
They only issued one. It was for this fellow. His name is Professor Abu Sattar Sheikh, right?
That's correct.
That is his name, and the White House intervened and refused to allow the subpoena to be served. So again, what we're talking about here, and I'm glad you brought me back to earth, so to speak, Daniel, extending our metaphor.
I was in Venice. I covered the Florida angle as best I could, and certainly I covered the Venice and the Gulf Coast angle.
Death in Venice, indeed.
Of a story that really is worldwide.
Right.
And as I was writing, you know, doing what I was doing in Welcome to Terrorland, whenever I would look up the most interesting thing going on concerning this so-called professor in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was a continuing story, and obviously there was something not visible going on there, because he was, all of the contention between the Senate and House Intelligence Committee hearings and the White House concerned him.
Okay, now let's start with Professor Abu Sattar Sheikh. Now, how does he connect directly to the September 11th hijackers?
He housed at least three terrorists in his home in San Diego in the year before the attack, while at the same time being an FBI informant in counterterrorism. That's what he was there for. He was there to inform the FBI on counterterrorism. I mean, He is written about as being a prominent Muslim leader in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. And actually, his credentials in and of itself are subject to review, and we're going to do a bit of that right now. But again, we should note that this person was an FBI informant. He housed three of the terrorists.
How do you do that? How do you be an FBI informant in counterterrorism?
Right.
Without telling your FBI handler who's living with you.
Well,
especially when, and I can't believe this. This is the story they've told us, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the same time when your FBI handler is specifically looking for the two men that lived with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does get very interesting indeed.
Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous, Dave. It's ridiculous.
Course,
the story
well,
makes no sense.
Well, that's...
It makes less sense than the two magic Dutch boys in Venice. It makes less sense than the magic bullet. I mean, on its face, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it is absolutely ridiculous, and the fact that the White House issued the blocked the subpoena raises some questions. Among the many, many, many questions I would ask is perhaps everything functioned exactly as it should have, only when all of this information got to an executive level, like, say, the White House, or somebody who could tar the White House, they put the nix on the whole thing and everything. You see what I'm saying? Anyway, the point is, obviously, the fix is in. What we're looking at here cannot be taken at face value. And why would the White House block a subpoena for this particular individual, a White House, an FBI informant, housing terrorists whom his FBI controlled?
I can tell you exactly why.
And that is?
For the same reason that the White House cloaks under executive privilege the actions and the activities of the Boston FBI.
Mm-hmm. And that's very interesting indeed. The Boston FBI, by the way.
You put the two of them together, my friend. You put the two of them together, and you got a big damn chunk of what they're covering up.
Yes, indeed. Boston FBI has an interesting history. In the 80s, the U.S. Attorney that was responsible for its activities ultimately was Robert Mueller, currently head of the FBI. And then, of course, many of the hijackers took off through Boston.
Well, I told you the story about the kid down here that committed suicide, haven't I?
Not that I remember.
How I found out that the White House claimed executive privilege on the internal notes and memos of the Boston office of the FBI was because of the kid down here. The only act of terrorism in the U.S. since the 9/11 attack occurred 3 months later in Tampa when a 17-year-old kid flew a light plane into a skyscraper.
Oh, okay. I remember that. No, you didn't tell me about that. I remember the incident.
Well, listen to this. Just listen to this.
Sure.
Okay. And they said he committed suicide because of his acne medication.
Uh-huh.
Which didn't quite explain why he, you know, what the acne medication, why the acne medication had made him leave a suicide note praising Osama bin Laden.
Right. I remember that was
so,
one of the things
so
that...
when I found that out, I went, what's up with this?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this kid? Well, the press couldn't get near his mom. For one entire week, this was like the biggest story in the world. The press couldn't get you, and you never saw her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was being protected. What I discovered was that this kid was the son of a half-Sicilian, half-Lebanese, all-mob Boston mobster named Charles Bishara.
Wow. The kid who flew the plane was his son?
Right.
Okay.
It was the son of a mobster on the lam for heroin trafficking, a Boston half-Sicilian, half-Lebanese mobster on the lam for heroin trafficking is this kid's dad.
Oh, man.
Now,
no, you didn't tell me that.
He's a strange dad. He hasn't lived with his dad since he was two, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the kid flies into a skyscraper, and he leaves a note praising Osama bin Laden. And, you know, I had the idea. Something clicked in my head, and I said to myself, that kid heard something. That kid overheard his dad talking, and that kid's dad's half Sicilian, half Lebanese, Boston mobster on the lam for heroin trafficking.
Hmm.
So I called. This is 4 months after September 11th, and this still kind of gives me chills when I think about it.
And by the way, for the audience, this is all new to me. I don't know any
right,
of this.
Right, right. I know it is. I called a guy who had been called back into service to because he had run Mujahideen in Afghanistan in 81. He worked for Reagan, in other words. This guy was a Reagan partisan, you would say.
I recognize the figure from Welcome to Terrorland. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And I still got a question for you. Is it at all possible that either the Sicilian mob or the Lebanese, you know, Christian clans that run heroin might have a beef with the current administration? He allowed that that might indeed be possible. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when he allowed that that might indeed be possible, I realized that we can't even put uniforms on all of the on all of the players.
Okay,
I mean,
so now
in terms of who attacked us and who defended us and who didn't.
Oh, in a general editorial note, Daniel, September 11th is not only one of the most and the things that led into it and have come out of it is not only one of the most important events in history, but it is really, really complex, and there are a number of different levels running in different areas, and so go ahead.
You follow my hypothesis, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got
this kid in an attempt to impress his absent father.
Yeah.
Who he had heard praise Osama bin Laden for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Flies into a skyscraper, and leaves a note praising Osama bin Laden.
Yep, now we should note that bin Laden and his milieu are deeply involved and have been for a long time with some of the narcotics traffic that's come out of the Afghanistan area and around the world from there. Go ahead.
Subsequent to that, through a story on a Boston company called P-TECH,
right,
owned by a Saudi terrorist, allowed to operate to this day. In Boston.
Yeah, P-TECH, by the way, is a subject that I've covered in a number of programs, and one of the amazing things is that it did software architecture for threat assessment software architecture for the Air Force and the FAA, and was basically capitalized by the Al-Taqwa/Al-Qaeda Muslim Brotherhood. So,
the interesting allegation there was that Osama bin Laden's service bureau, the back office, of which Al-Qaeda was the front,
mm-hmm.
Operated through Boston with the protection of the Boston FBI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like. That was the allegation. And certainly no one could offer any explanations for why that company was able to reach so deeply into American intelligence, into the American infrastructure. They have they had, you know, their software in the White House.
Sure. You know, it's funny, Danny, when you mentioned that inquiries, the FBI files from Boston were made secret. I didn't even connect that with P-TECH in my mind. But now, as I think about this, nice, exactly what you're talking about with this being.
Well, so
as
they nest
a key.
Things, dude.
Go
they
ahead.
Nest things.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where you find one weird op, you'll find another.
Well, no, but the P-TECH, you know, that is so amazing. And the one of the key people, by the way, in P-TECH is a guy named Yaqub Mirza. He's a director of P-TECH, very closely connected to the FBI. And he was the fellow that set up the fronts in suburban Washington, D.C., in the Virginia-Maryland Beltway area, that were not only used, apparently, to help finance activities of Al-Qaeda and Hamas, but that also have strong links connecting the Al-Taqwa-Hamas-Al-Qaeda link to the ethnic outreach branch of the GOP and Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute. And that intersects directly not only with the highest power echelons of the GOP, but also George Bush's circle, and you've written about that. So, yes, indeedy, I think that these are some very, very raw nerve endings indeed.
So now we got this, so that was my first hypothesis, and you know, then we found all this other stuff going on in Boston, and when you went, you know,
uh-huh.
And you know, and especially when I talked to that guy, because although he didn't like me much, he didn't lie to me, you know, and he'd been there. I mean, he'd just gotten some nurses out. This was before we went to war. There were some nurses there,
okay.
Held hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he allowed that there could be the Sicilian mafia in conjunction with the Lebanese Christian clans that run heroin, plus God knows who else, you know, had formed an alliance against whoever they were attacking. That looked like a drug war.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that looks like.
A struggle over heroin turf, basically.
a struggle over world control and world domination, because clearly the American CIA in the 50s made a calculation that the Golden Triangle in Southeast Asia was critical to American national security.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Who knows if they were right? I mean, when you think about the amount of money, the drug trade has grown into, would you rather have the CIA control it or the Mujahideen?
Well, it does present an interesting moral quandary in that regard.
That's what they're fighting for.
That's
the fight going on right now. I mean, Osama bin Laden was supplying our heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In the year 2000, 60% of U.S. heroin consumption came from Afghanistan.
Sure.
That was Osama bin Laden.
Absolutely.
So, he was a major account of somebody's, because that kind of traffic does not go unnoticed.
And one of the things that one should notice and note in that context, in the spring of 2001, the Bush administration kicked $43 million to the Taliban for the wonderful job that they had done allegedly containing the Afghani opium traffic. That in light of and in the context of what you just mentioned. So that certainly suggests some of the lines of power. The drug war aspect of this is really remarkable, Dan, and also obviously...
Yeah, and at the same time, I got to say something here. I mean, this conversation is just ranging, okay? I mean,
yep.
If you want to focus it on San Diego, I'd be happy to. But
yeah.
But Al-Qaeda was, in 2000, 2001, increasing, according to the UN, opium production by like 35%. All right? At the same time that they were saying publicly, we've cut off opium.
Right.
Okay? At that same time. But interesting individuals with shadowy connections, like Mike Rupert, don't ever mention that. Don't ever get to that.
Rupert. I think Rupert's done some discussion of some of the Afghan opium traffic, but he certainly not past a point and not in a while. But he is someone who has certainly a background.
Well, and the only reason I mention his name is because there's a whole school of thought out there that we basically attacked ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's far more complex than that. But that would, as I mentioned, that looking at it from one perspective, it would certainly look that way, because there was a massive fifth column. You know what that does? It gets into an almost Clinton-esque syntactical discussion. It depends on who we and us are, because it really does get into an interesting question. But going back to San Diego, if we could... just focus on that. The whole question of the drug war and I was not at all aware of the link between Mr. Peshawar and the fellow, the young fellow who crashed into the plane in Florida. But one of the interesting things is, now going back again to the article that you've written, by the way, it's on your website, www.madcow.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that digression.
Oh, no, don't apologize. It's fascinating and important.
One thing does tend to lead to another, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think if you could interview the full lineup of the people that engineered these things, including some who are now dead, going back, was it like George Dooley and people, who was the other fellow associated with the airlines? I believe his name began with H, just off the top of my head, with the CIA Airlines.
George Dooley was the guy that I wrote a chapter of Barry and the Boys about.
Yeah, he did, and some of the other people who were involved with the CIA Airlines. And it, I think a lot of them...
Well, an anecdote from that serves to get us into San Diego, okay?
Right.
Because in San Diego, what we've got is a bunch of phony universities.
Mm-hmm.
Being used as dummy fronts for something,
and
then
one
we'll
of,
talk
and,
about what.
Yeah.
But before they used dummy universities, they used dummy airlines. In 1972, when Richard Helms was appointed director of the CIA, he asked his assistants to count up the number of airplanes the CIA owned worldwide.
Right.
And the report 3 weeks later came back that there could be no accurate count, because George Dooley had been so successful at creating boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes that they even the CIA didn't know how many they had. That's an amazing story, isn't it?
Well, it gets into some very interesting questions about where this. Paul Helliwell was the guy I was thinking about. You know, if you could interview these guys, Paul Helliwell and George Dooley, I think they'd say, yeah, one thing does tend to lead to another. And Abdul Sattar Sheikh, not
right.
His actual name.
Right.
We'll get
so,
into that.
So knowing, I mean, and this is not peculiar, I don't believe, to the CIA, but I mean, this is one thing that intelligence agencies worldwide do, and that is operate under false fronts. So here we come into San Diego, and this Abu Sadr Sheikh guy is obviously key. The White House won't let him talk to anybody, and the FBI moves him. He's in the Witness Protection Program now, and you know, they whisked him, you know, the hell out of the country, I'll bet.
And he was an FBI informant. He was housing some of the hijackers.
If you could get this guy on a witness stand and ask him 6 hours of questions, you know, a lot of what we're talking about today would just be plain as we watched. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
yeah.
We'd learn what happened.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm just trying to review for people because we have, as you noted, ranged quite far and wide. But again, Professor Abdul Sattar Sheikh is the fellow, an FBI informant, who was housing some terrorists, including a couple of eventual hijackers, while his FBI control, so to speak, was looking for some of these same people. And when the congressional committee that was investigating 9/11 issued its only subpoena, it was for this fellow, and the White House blocked it. That's the guy we're talking about. Tell us more about him, Daniel.
Well, I got interested. I'm not going to tell you how I got interested in him. Let me tell you what I found out about him first.
Okay.
He is not who they said he was. The San Diego Times Union lied to the world, which was then picked up on the wire services. This guy was a professor of English at San Diego State. He's not a professor of English anywhere. He's not a professor at all. He's never taught at San Diego State. He has a phony PhD issued from one of these phony universities that was helmed by a man who, a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, who was chief of mental health rehabilitation or something for Special Forces. His title's on the website. I forget at the moment.
I'll read it for the benefit of the listeners. Dr. Richard Cruz, an MD from Harvard, whose pedigree includes stints as chief of psychiatry at Womack Military Hospital and, quote, chief of mental hygiene consultation services, unquote, at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, home of American Special Forces. Sounds distinctly like someone who is involved with the psychological aspects of covert ops, including possibly mind control functions of
big
one type or another.
Big time.
Yep.
Big time. What he's been involved in lately is getting in touch with the space beings, okay?
And by the way...
And founding new countries called New Utopia on concrete pontoons on reefs in the Caribbean.
By the way, it was one of the universities that this fellow, one of these bogus universities that this fellow was associated with, that gave a diploma to John Gray.
Our friend John.
The Khashoggi associate, who is the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, who also had connections to the Heaven's Gate cultists, and one of Abdul Sattar Sheikh's associates, the aforementioned Sam Kuches Fahani, was renting the territory, or renting the property to the Heaven's Gate suicide cultists when they decided to...
We have this professor with no obvious reason for being in San Diego.
Right.
Okay. I've determined that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this other guy, Sam Kuches Fahani,
right,
an Iranian, who has dual distinctions. Okay. And the distinction that came to my mind first was he was convicted of infiltrating Middle Eastern men, several hundred of them, over almost a decade, into the U.S. through San Diego, through bribing college professors to give them phony academic credentials to get visas.
Mm-hmm.
So he's running a ring, a spy ring, all right? infiltrating Middle Eastern men. He admits to it. He's at the same time turned and become an FBI informant.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's an FBI informant, he buys the mansion that the Heaven's Gate cult moves into.
Right. Now, very briefly, that was the group down in Rancho Santa Fe that took their own lives back in the late 1990s.
39 of them.
39 of them headed up by Guyana.
They were going to, I had to read up on this, because, I mean, it hits you and then you forget about it. They were going to a spaceship hidden in the tail of the Hale-Bopp comet.
Allegedly. They were going to the level above human. What we should remember is that
Yeah, and it's sad because I mean, I never wanted to get into this mind control stuff, but watching tapes of these people, they were clearly brainwashed.
Oh.
Brainwashed. And some of them weren't dumb. What's chilling about it is the stark efficiency visible.
Well, that particular group. What I simply wanted to do is to remind some of the associations, remind people of the. But Marshall Applewhite, who's the head of the group.
We're on this Iranian guy, Sam.
Yeah, who's renting to these guys?
And he's got. I mean, you wouldn't think he'd be involved with brainwashing and mind control, right? I mean, he's an Iranian. He's not even American, and cults.
And he's also a former weapons dealer. He's also a former weapons dealer for the Shah. Remembering the Heaven's Gate cultists who were renting from former Shah weapons dealer Sam Cooch Esfahani.
Dude, I have a very funny story, and I'll tell it to you because nobody listening to you is going to know these people.
But let me just remind the listeners of some of the otherwise they're going to be completely lost here, I'm afraid. Of course, they can always go to www.madcow.prod. But again, Marshall Applewhite, the head of this cult that was renting from Cooch Esfahani, he not only went to the same he taught at the same college that the aforementioned John Gray was from, but he also apparently knew John Gray's mother in Texas, who ran a New Age bookstore in Texas. And again, John Gray, for 9 years,
right down the street.
Exactly. And for 9 years, John Gray was the personal secretary of the Maharishi, associated now, the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and a business partner of Iran-Contra player and alleged Al-Qaeda funder, Adnan Khashoggi. So this is a very new age.
You know what the suspicion there is, too, don't you? Applewhite gets bounced from the St. Thomas Aquinas University
right.
that he's a chorus teacher at, while John Gray is a student.
Okay.
For fondling male students or having an affair with a male student.
Okay.
And he goes in for psychiatric reprogramming. That's what happens to Marshall Applewhite.
We're going to continue with this discussion about the Heaven's Gate suicide cult, how that courses into the river of 9/11 and related events, but we're going to do that on Side 2. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 507, Knock, Knock, Knocking on Heaven's Gate, another conversation with Daniel Hopsicker. This has been recorded on April 17th of 2005. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.